Welcome to Wine About History. I'm your host, Max Hamill, and with me always is Patty.
Hello, everyone.
And today we're talking about Jimmy Hoffa in honor of the Irishman trailer coming out.
So excited.
I'm very excited for that movie. And what we're drinking today is Exodus. And the reason we're drinking Exodus, it's not spelled in the biblical way. It's spelled E-X-I-T-U-S. And the caption is that it's bold and fearless, wine without rules. And I really like that. It reminded me of Jimmy Hoffa. And there's a little thing at the bottom that says, ask forgiveness, not permission. Jimmy would not even ask for forgiveness.
The name of it just sounds so final. Exodus.
And it is a negotiation room.
It is a deep red wine. It's the kind of wine that's going to make your teeth purple.
I like it.
At least mine anyway. Yeah, it's good. It's rich.
If you weren't like me and didn't brush your teeth as a kid, yeah, your teeth are going to be purple.
Man, I did brush my teeth and they still turn purple when I drink wine like this. It's worth it, though.
It is good. It's good purple teeth wine.
It is good purple teeth wine. So tell me about Jimmy Hoffa. I think we've all heard of him, but maybe we don't know a lot about the man, just more the mystery.
So we covered a lot of this and a lot of him and what happened in the Frank Sheeran episodes. And I really encourage everyone, if you're an American, read that book. Read I Hear You Paint Houses, because it has such an interesting perspective on American politics, crime, society, World War II, America post-World War II, the Depression, all of it. It's something you as an American need to read. And if you're not an American and you just like gangster stories, read it as well.
It's for everyone.
Not for children.
Okay, maybe not little kids.
I just imagine someone reading it off in the gruff into a kindergarten crowd, and that's when I killed so-and-so.
Just terrorize the little kids.
So Jimmy Hoffa, for those of you who know, was a major, major union leader and labor rights advocate. In fact, in his time, he was more famous than anyone alive. He was everywhere. He was the Beatles of unions.
The Beatles of organized labor.
So you could argue that he helped lead the American worker into prosperity. When he was born in 1913 in Brazil, Indiana, to John Cleveland Hoffa and Viola Hoffa. Her maiden name was Riddle. And his ancestors were originally Pennsylvania Germans and Irish Americans. And his father was a coal miner who died when Jimmy Hoffa was seven. And this tragedy happened. His mother worked hard to protect her family. Jimmy Hoffa described her as a woman who, and I quote, believed that duty and discipline were spelled with capital D's. So he and his siblings had to get after-school jobs to support their family. You can immediately see, this is actually a pretty common story in that time period, but you can immediately see how that would make someone care about labor rights. Your father dies in a coal mine when you're seven. Mm-hmm. So some sources reported he dropped out of school to work for his family. Frank Sheeran said that Hoffa did not have a formal education, but was very knowledgeable and very street smart. So in 1924, Hoffa moved to Detroit and began working there at a grocery store where they loaded crates full of strawberries. They only paid for the time they loaded these crates from the store into these trucks, but they had to stay there for a 12-hour shift. They'd be sitting around hours not getting paid when it could be, and it was horrible.
Yeah, I wouldn't like that at all.
Keep in mind, these men have families, responsibilities. If they don't load enough strawberries today, they're not going to eat. Different world. Very different world. I mean, some of you have pretty good. Hopefully you have as good as I do. Imagine having to sit and going and praying that you can load crates of strawberries all day so you get to eat tonight.
Yeah.
Big difference between, I have to go to work so I can eat anything I want.
Yeah, because that would have been pre-welfare, right? So yes. You didn't work, you starved probably.
And you can see this is why unions became so popular. And this led to the Strawberry Boys. Now, one hot summer day, they were loading strawberries, and after a signal from Jimmy Hoffa, the workers all stopped and demanded that their union be recognized. Now, this union would be guaranteed oh so many hours of pay, better working conditions, basically basic rights as human beings. Well, the strawberries were melting in that heat, so the grocery store owners had to sign, otherwise they would have lost hundreds of dollars. So you can see right away, Jimmy's smart. He waited for the right time to ambush.
Timing
the
is
owners.
Everything. Yeah, if he'd done it like
in February.
In the morning. Right, February.
February morning.
No strawberries, dude. Well, and the strawberry season's somewhat short, too. Mm-hmm. So I imagine they had to, you know, make hay when the sun shines. Mm-hmm.
And strawberries are kind of a commodity.
Mm hmm.
They cost a little more than your other fruits.
Well, and now, you know, with shipping, I mean, you can get them from California or somewhere almost year round.
Couldn't do that back then, and
yeah.
There was less pesticides.
True.
And less GMO and all this other stuff. And strawberries, without GMOs, they're actually oval-shaped, mostly. Not
well, that's interesting.
So in 1932, he became a Teamster organizer for Local 299. He cooperated with other labor officials for small unions to join the Teamsters, increasing their power. And this is a very dangerous time to be a union organizer. I think he said that his scalp was laid open by police or union busters 26 times in this time period when he was early struggling. Like
he probably suffered a traumatic brain injury.
He suffered a bunch. And so, they would have union picket lines and the company would hire people who didn't have jobs or off-duty policemen to go in there with sticks and beat everyone up.
Aww, and break the union. It seems mean.
Well, the union didn't do good, nice things, as you'll see. So from in 1933, the Teamsters were 75,000 people. They rose to 170,000 in 1936. And in 1939, there was nearly 500,000 of them. And during the World War II, they increased, and during the second, and they reached 1,000,000 in 1951. Jimmy Hoffa is
huge. That's huge growth. That's exponential growth.
And on top of that, keep in mind, this is when the population was much smaller. Like 1,000,000 people back then was holy. Now 1,000,000 people is like 1/300th of the country, but it was 200,000,000 people in our country in 1980 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. One could argue we have a population problem, but no, we're not that kind of podcast. We're talking about history, not modern things. And in 1942, he became the president of Local 299 at the age of 29. Now, I got interested in this when I was a Teamster working at UPS. I was actually interested before this, but I got really interested in Jimmy Hoffa during that time period. And to be head of a local at 29 is insane.
That's huge.
Yeah, you gotta be. You're in your 40s and 50s normally when you're head of a local.
He was ambitious. Mm-hmm. Was he ambitious, or was he just like? Did he just believe in this so much?
Both. Both. From my research, he genuinely cared about the working man and his rights. At the same time, he wanted to be rich and powerful, but not at the expense of others. He had a good life, but he didn't live ostentatiously. Like some of the union labor officials now and after him, they're, you know, ridiculous millionaires for no reason, you know, that kind of thing. And we know 1950s was when the mob became part of the Teamsters. For instance, Joey Glimco in Chicago, who worked for Al Capone when he was younger, he was part of the union racket. Tony Provenzano was a big union authority. So Tony Provost was a capo in I don't remember which family, but I know he's a captain. So Jimmy Hoffa stopped an internal revolt against Dave Beck, the president of the International Brotherhood of Teamsters at the time. And his reward was to become vice president. And he was very efficient and aggressive, Jimmy Hoffa. He was always in control of his environment. He didn't drink or smoke, so no one drank or smoked around him. If you were on time, you were 15 minutes late. And he grinded every day to make his life better for the American worker and those rights. And some of those rights were soaked in blood and tainted by crime. Because that's how you, to be frank, that's sometimes how you get things done. Not legally. Something that's interesting about him is something I've noticed about a lot of great people is they're very disciplined about sleep. Now, some people have no control of their sleep. I wake up in the middle of the night pretty much every night. But it's one of those things that if you can control, more power to you. So back to the crime and blood and grisly union wars.
Right, because that's the really interesting part. Mm-hmm. Let's be honest.
Let's be honest here. Let's be honest. You need to see The Irishman. Evan Brandt needs to give me a call so I can do an interview him, please. If any of you know the author of that book, have him call me. So he fought Jimmy. Actually, we don't know all the things Jimmy did. We know he had places bombed. He went to war with the AFL-CIO, another union group that kicked him out because his methods were too aggressive. But then they come in after he won over a bunch of workers and say, "Hey, why don't you join the AFL-CIO?" And they had their own hitmen, and they would go to war with his hitmen. So Jimmy fought through a series of accusations by Bobby Kennedy. Bobby Kennedy was trying to go after him out,
At the time, he was Attorney General.
He was Attorney General. I forget that most people didn't know that because I live in history, so I kind of get steeped in it. He was Attorney General when his father, JFK, was president.
No, that was his brother.
Brother. His father was a...
This is why I'm here, people.
This is, yeah. She puts the wine away and steers me back on track. his father was actually a bootlegger that worked with the mafia. But yeah, back to Bobby Kennedy. Bobby Kennedy was Attorney General. He was very upset about the power the mafia had. And one of the ways... he had Jimmy Hoffa dead to rights one time. And he said, if Jimmy Hoffa is acquitted, I would jump off the Capitol dome. So, here's what Jimmy did. He had his lawyer strike all... This is what happened. You can get mad at me. This is what happened. He had his lawyer strike all the white jurors. Now, keep in mind, Jimmy Hoffa was a huge civil rights advocate when civil rights were highly contested. So keep that in mind. And so he had all the jurors were African American, and he had a paper put out in African American communities talking about how he was an advocate for civil rights, which is true, big advocate for civil rights. And so he was acquitted. And that is how you get away with stuff. That's how you work politics. Your thoughts? I mean, that's what happened.
Well, good for him, I guess. Yeah. You know, you do what you got to do, he's clever.
Yeah,
very
he's
clever.
Just so street smart about that. And he really was a massive civil rights supporter. He would make a point to hire African American workers and African American staff members for his personal team, so they could get experience and go back and help African American communities. Hmm. One of his lawyers was a very, very clever black woman who. Name escapes me because everyone's name escapes me. I forget my own name sometimes, people. But anyways, so what happened was what he did get in trouble for was jury tampering. He kept the mafia and his friends, Jimmy's friends, kept trying to convince jurors to vote his way during that one trial. One of multiple trials, actually. And it came back to haunt him. So, Bobby finally got him up for jury tampering. He was caught, pretty much red-handed, with a bribe.
Oops.
So he went to prison, and he was trying to bribe an official to see what the list of the jury name was. And what happened was he went to prison in 1967, which after an alleged bribe, we gotta say alleged. Now, Nixon commuted the sentence in 1971.
Interesting.
And allegedly, it was Frank Sheeran that drove a suitcase full of money to one of Nixon's lawyers. Allegedly.
Well, yeah. Did Nixon give a reason why he commuted his sentence? No?
I don't remember.
I'm sure he did. It should be in my notes here, but
I think he gave a reason.
It wasn't just a whole bag of money.
Yeah, no, he didn't give one reason. He gave a million reasons.
That's right.
But I'm.
Well, gee.
Well, you were alive during this time period. Yeah. Very, very young.
Very, very young. But yes. Well, what time period are we talking about? Just 1970s, to be clear.
Early 1970s. Okay, yeah. Mm-hmm. So do you remember any of this at all?
No. Well, I remember Nixon being in office, and I remember a lot of jokes about Jimmy Hoffa after he disappeared. I don't know if they were jokes, but it was just like, yeah, it wasn't maybe really a joke, but it was like, I don't know.
The media frenzy of it?
Yeah. I guess joke's not the right word, but yeah. There was something in the paper about Jimmy Hoffa's buried here. Haha. It was because no one knew what happened to him or where he was. They just said he disappeared.
Taste. And even I have a dark sense of humor.
Yeah, I don't know. But I was kind of young, so I didn't really get it. And I was like, who's Jimmy Hoffa? And yeah.
You should Skype someone who's alive and during that time period and competent.
Yeah, my mother. We could ask her.
Yeah. Should have, would have, could have. So a deal was struck. And the deal was struck that Nixon would commute his sentence. And by the way, Hoffa was anti-JFK because JFK would put his brother in there. His brother didn't like Jimmy. And Jimmy, loved to bug him. So Jimmy was a union guy. He knew how to argue. So he'd mess with everything Robert. If you want a treat, go and watch Jimmy Hoffa and Bobby Kennedy go back and forth on YouTube. It's kind of funny. It's like a roast, but you're roasting the guy to his face, and it's not a joke.
Really?
Oh, he's just brutal to him.
I didn't know that thing existed.
Oh, it does exist. We're going to watch afterwards.
Okay.
I might put it in the show notes, but I don't know if I'll get in trouble because of copyright strikes. But anyways, so one caveat, I hope I'm pronouncing that word, caveat was that Hoffa could not be involved in union work until 1980.
Oh, that was a caveat of his commuted sentence. Okay.
But here's where it gets weird. Walter Sheridan, who was one of Nixon's advisors, and he was a prosecutor, put that in at the last moment.
Mm.
With that, they didn't tell Jimmy Hoffa they put it in. He saw he was livid, and he said Nixon, the Mafia, and Fitzsimmons, his replacement as international president of the International Brotherhood of Teamsters, conspired against him. Now, Fitzsimmons, also known as Fitzy or Fitz, was a weaker man than Jimmy Hoffa, and he was easier to get pension loans because you get pension loans from the Teamster Retirement Plan, which is billions of dollars back when billions was ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
And we're talking a time period when millionaires were astounding and billions was unheard of. Well, the Mafia, whenever they wanted to build a casino in Las Vegas, would go to the Teamsters and say, we want a pension fund. And they were easier to get from Fitzsimmons because he was scared of them, whereas Jimmy was just as tough as any mafioso. So the gangsters didn't want it, Nixon didn't want it, and Fitzsimmons didn't want him. They all did not want him to be in charge of the union. They said his mafia friends said, just wait. Jimmy, just wait. And then things got bad because, no one from the President of the United States to the dons of the Mafia wants you back to do something and you say you've got to do it, bad things are going to happen.
Yeah, you're asking for it.
So Jimmy began to threaten to expose the Mafia in organized labor.
What could go right?
Well, he said, and this is a time period when he's talking in the third person because he was so popular and famous, it kind of went to his head. And he said, he would say things like, Hoffa has evidence put aside. They wouldn't dare kill Hoffa. And his mafia friend, specifically Frank Sheeran, say, doesn't matter.
Yeah.
That doesn't matter.
They want you dead, you're dead.
Doesn't matter. It's the Mafia. They don't want. Yeah. And Jimmy began these threats, and they said he's just puffing until they sat him down. And the real godfather, the real godfather, the gangster who rules everything but you've never heard of, Russo Bufalino, sat him down and said, you can't do this anymore. And that's someone saying, if you keep talking, we have to kill you. So on July 30th, 1975, Jimmy Hoffa disappeared.
He sure did.
Yes. And according to our, you know, Frank Sheeran in our last episode, what happened was there was supposed to be one final sit-down talk. Jimmy Hoffa walked into the house. He realized it was a hit. He turned around, bumped into Frank. And he was so confident in Frank Sheeran's affection and friendship that he didn't even think that Frank would be the man to kill him. He just went for the door because he knew Frank would have his back. So Frank had, I mean, if Frank Sheeran had done this, he would have died, his wife would have died, and someone else would have killed Jimmy Hoffa. So he turned around, and the quote from the book is, "My friend felt no pain."
Aww. Well, that's good. Yeah. I mean, I guess that's the way to go. Yeah, but he was probably terrified. But he probably was. But here's the thing: he was fearless, right?
He was completely really fearless,
bold and fearless, like the wine, which did him good up until a point. Yeah.
And then he ran out of that house trying to get survive, not because he was a coward.
I mean, right. If a
hitman's coming after you, you don't. I challenge you to a fisticuffs. No. But here's what gets even more interesting.
Well, okay, can I... Go ahead. Wouldn't he have been armed?
No.
He wouldn't have.
No,
why
you
not?
Don't carry a gun to things like that.
Why not?
Because...
You're on a... Essentially, he knew that he was on a hit list or whatever.
No,
why not
he didn't
be
know that. He was egotistical.
Oh, okay.
He thought he was invincible.
Okay.
And you don't carry guns in that business. You have a gun nearby.
Okay.
So, you show up to the meeting place 24 hours early... You park a car that you stole or rented. You tape a 38 special underneath the bumper. And then it's right next to the cafe outdoors where you're going to have the meeting. So there's an issue. You run to that car.
Gotcha. Okay.
I read a lot of gangster biographies.
Okay. You can continue your thought that I completely
understand. A lot of people said, Evan Brandt's lying. They're lying. They're lying. They're lying. They're lying. They're lying. Well, they went to that house where Jimmy Hoffa was murdered. And... Evan Brandt was talking to the current owner, and he said, yeah, there's supposed to be a door, but I just see there's a wall there. Because everyone said he's lying. He's trying to prove he wasn't lying. He said, oh, and the current owner said, oh, that door. That door's in the garage. I took it out and filled in the wall. What? Can I see it? And that door off to the side where they pulled Jimmy's body out of, according to Frank Sheeran, was exactly the way Frank Sheeran described it. And this is where it gets really freaky. There's some kind of silver nitrate chemical they can spray in the air that will pick up, you know, 50-year-old blood particles.
Seriously?
Seriously.
Ugh.
So to be honest, people, I couldn't find my copy. I realized I gave my copy away to a friend of the, you know, Harry Payne houses. And maybe I'll get it back. So I can't remember everything about the deals. But they sprayed that in the air and they found the blood right where Frank Sheeran said it was.
Wow. Well, I guess I gotta believe that book,
I believe what
happened because it kind of makes sense.
He also killed Joey Gallo allegedly, and then Joey Gallo was a crazy Joe Gallo and jerk of a gangster, and they said, oh, he didn't do that either, because the reason he was still useful is because he's a big giant Irish guy. He was like 6'4".
You're talking about Frank Sheeran.
Frank Sheeran, yeah. Jimmy was 5'10", I believe,
mm-hmm.
But I was trying to say, so if you're Italian mafia people who are known for looking Italian, it's useful to have a giant Irishman around.
Sure.
So he killed Joey Gallo, and then a witness at the Joey Gallo scene said, yeah, that was him. I saw that face for years in my nightmares.
Oh, well, I'm really, who's going to play him in the movie? Do we know?
Robert De Niro.
He's going to play the Irishman?
Yeah, they have CGI of his face. It's kind of goofy.
Wow.
It's like the CGI in Star Wars.
Robert De Niro is not known for being tall.
No, but he is Irish.
He is Irish. That's what I've heard. He's more Irish than Italian.
You can angle cameras and things like that.
Okay. All right. Interesting. That wouldn't be my first choice. I mean, I like Robert De Niro as an actor, but I don't know if he'd be my first choice to play Frank Sheeran, but okay. Well, all right. Well, that explains a lot because it was such a mystery for so long. And like I said, when I was a little kid, they would talk, maybe joke a little about what happened to Jimmy Hoffa because no one knew. He was there one day, gone the next.
What pissed me off is I got into an argument with one of those friends that love to argue. Yes.
Oh, yes. A couple that are like that.
And he's like, well, there's no body, there's no case. And it's like, you do know bodies can get... I almost lost my temper. Like, people can get rid of bodies, idiot. They can burn them, feed them to wolves. There was, believe it or not, for a while, there was a gang in Boulder, Colorado during the 80s cocaine craze. Everything's Boulder's hippies. Well, you know, hippies like cocaine. They're gangsters supplying it. And I was reading a biography, and the gangster said in it, he said, they never killed anybody because it's Boulder, so wild. They would knock people out, duct tape them up, rope them up. Vietnam veterans would do this, throw them in the woods covered in peanut butter.
Ew.
Come back later, bodies eaten by wildlife, bury the bones, smash the teeth.
Ew, that's gross. So I guess technically you didn't kill somebody, but you killed them.
Yeah. You can look at it. I didn't kill him. I didn't cut his throat. I didn't shoot him. I didn't do anything to him, man. Let me take a polygraph test.
You left him for dead. That's the same thing.
Yeah, but you can say, did you kill him? No. And you can think to yourself, the bear killed him. Technically, it was the bear that ripped his throat out.
I might have helped things along a little, but...
I got weird with some rope, left a jar of peanut butter. Who knows what happens? Really, it's his responsibility. I mean, he's out in the woods by himself. He should know better.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. All right. Well, any last thoughts before we wrap up this episode?
Be careful if you get involved with gangsters.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying, you can't be friends with a gangster or anything like that. To buy Exodus wine. If you know anyone who works at Exodus Wine, have them call us because I want more. Dang it. I will develop a whole fifth episode every month. If whoever listens to this and knows anyone who knows anything about wine, if they send me wine, I will make like an Exodus hour and have a show at the end of every month sponsored solely by that wine.
Wow, you're serious about that.
I like it a lot.
That's good. I can
taste the bourbon too.
It's one of those aged in bourbon aged barrel bourbon deals.
I thought
there was a little something extra there.
Oh, this is why I'm almost slurring my words. 15.9% alcohol.
It seems like a lot.
It's a little bit more than your average wine.
Well, wine is more than beer and less than liquor, right?
Mm-hmm. More than beer, less than liquor. Unless you're drinking Dragon Milk Stout.
Oh.
That's like 12% alcohol. And
wow.
Didn't know that when I first had it. And I'm watching these debates. Next thing I know, I'm like, why are there four candidates instead of two?
Hit you hard, huh?
Yeah. Oh, it really did. All right. So
we got a little off track there, but it's good.
Well, you know what? That's what that 15.9% of alcohol will do to you. Get you off track.
That's right.
All right. So next week. Episode, we're going to do Pat Crow, who pulled off the first successful kidnapping in American history.
Wow.
Indeed.
Yes. Well, all right. Well, thank you everyone for joining us again and listening to our rant about history. Mm-hmm. And let us know if you have any comments and if there's anything that you would like us to cover, we'd be happy to do it.
Mm-hmm. Anything to cover, any wine suggestions, I'm going to leave Twitter in the show notes, constructive criticism.
Yeah, we'll take the feedback for sure.
We'll take the feedback.
All right, I think that'll do it.
So thank you all for listening. And remember,
if it weren't for history, we wouldn't be here.